episode of the River Blast Podcast. I am Noah Hiles. He is Alex Stumpf. Alex, I have a question for you to start things off. What are we?
I don't know. Everything's just been going so fast.
I know. 6 wins in 5 days, people thought we were talking about each other. We're buddies. No, but what are the Pittsburgh Pirates right now? 6 wins in 5 days, six in a row, season-high win streak to go into the All-Star break, winners of 8 of their last 10, and now they come out of the All-Star break on Friday, taking on a last-place Cincinnati Reds team, a good Cleveland Indians team, but then play the Mets for 4 games at home. Alex, has this recent hot play maybe changed your opinion on what the Pirates should do at the deadline?
Well, I think, like a lot of people, I had them written off for dead, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, especially whenever you give up 17 runs in, you know, multiple games in a week. But you know what? They came into this last week of baseball knowing that it was put up or shut up time. They could not afford to go pretty much anything worse than 8-1 against the Nationals and the Brewers, and they have a legendary 5-game sweep of the Brew Crew. They win the series against the Nats, and all of a sudden they've earned the right, I think, to be back in purgatory, where, you know, these next couple series are omni-important, you know, because, yeah, the Reds are in last place, but they're playing pretty good baseball right now. Cleveland is a fairly good team also. The Mets are garbage. But they're going to need to win another 8 games if they really want to solidify themselves as contender, because that at that point they'll be 5 games over .500. They'll be about eyeballing it, 3 games out of a wild card spot. Yeah, they'll still have a couple teams to leapfrog over there. But, you know, 3 games out at the wild card chase, I think, or at the trade deadline, I think allows you to call yourself a buyer, or at the very least, not a seller.
I'll agree with the not seller part. The Mets should be a given. I would hope that they can win 3 of 4 against the
Mets. They've got to win at least 3 of 4.
But that's not my worry coming out of here. First off, this 5-game sweep was fun to watch, and that last week was really enjoyable for anyone who, you know, covers or is a fan of the Pirates. This team is still in sell mode, and they still should be in sell mode as of right now. Now, they are on call to be taken off sell mode. But these next 2 series against the Reds and the Indians, to me, are going to dictate where this season will go. You know, the Pirates have played horrible pretty much our entire lifetime at Great American Ballpark, it seems. And as you mentioned, you know, the Reds are playing well as of late. They have some grade-A Pirate killers in their lineup. That's not a series I see this team going into with, or I don't feel confident with them going into that series. I feel more confident in them taking 2 out of 3 against the first-place Indians than I do against the last-place Reds.
Absolutely.
And that sentence alone doesn't make me feel like this team should ever be buying at the deadline. Now, they could prove me wrong. They could prove me wrong if they win 5 of their first 6 games out of the break. That is when they need to be buyers. I think the decision to become a buyer has to happen before the Mets thing, because after the Mets series ends, you have that off day on the 30th, and then you play the Cubs on the 31st. So with your scenario that you talked about, them winning 8 of their next 10, by the time that happens, we're at the final day of the deadline, where you could still make a couple big moves.
Yeah.
But deciding the final day of the deadline to be a buyer is not really going to benefit many teams, especially a team like the Pirates, who seems that, you know, while it takes everyone 3 steps to make a move, I feel like the Pirates have to take 5 steps. You know, like, it just seems to be more difficult, anything trade-related with them in general. So I think they need to dominate, as they did this past week, they need to dominate these 2 series coming up. If they win 5 of their next 6, that is when, because, again, you have to assume, which, you know, this franchise doesn't like to assume anything, and for good reason, but you have to assume then we're going to beat these Mets 3 out of 4 games. We need to add now. We got to strike while the iron is hot.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And even whenever I say 8 out of 10, that at the very worst indicates that they win 4 out of these next 6, which would put them over 500.
Yeah.
Which I think if you're over 500, you don't sell at that point. I mean, I'm sure right now Huntington has, you know, fielded calls both as a seller and as a buyer. And fortunately, there aren't a whole lot of teams in this middle ground. Or the teams that are in the middle ground right now, like the Washington Nationals, they are clearly buyers. They realize that this is it. This is it. They're not going to flip Herrera.
And then on the flip side, a team in middle ground like the St. Louis Cardinals, probably sellers now.
Probably. I mean, if you fire manager.
And, like, two other coaches to go with it. I wouldn't be surprised to see them. I wouldn't be surprised. Here's a take for you. To see the Cardinals finish last in the National League Central.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Think about it. The Reds have gotten two managers fired this year.
Yeah. Really?
That's an organization that's just kind of up in the air right now. And a lot of it's Matheny, and I know there's a lot of behind-the-scenes things.
Yeah, Bud Norris.
Bud Norris and Hicks and whatever's happening with Fowler. I feel for the guy right there.
Yeah. So I don't want to get too into trade talk, obviously, because that's going to be a big part of next week's show. And maybe even the show following that. But let's say hypothetically they are buyers. What are you looking for right now for this Pirates team? What do you want to improve on?
I want to improve the middle infield. I am very vocal in not buying relievers at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw it, you know, on Tuesday in Washington whenever Felipe Vasquez and Blake Treinen are talking to one another. In Washington Stadium, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Those are two all-star closers that the Nationals gave up.
But to counteract your point, the Nationals had Sean Doolittle at that game also.
Yes, but they traded away two all-star relievers.
Yeah, I know.
And in the end, they got rental Mark Melanson and Doolittle, who, is an all-star reliever, but still. They also gave up, you know, the players that are now, like, Oakland's number one and number nine prospects.
Yeah.
Okay, but I don't think there is a lot of demand up the middle right now, or there is more supply than there is demand. So they could buy someone. Josh Harrison, we haven't heard a whole lot from him since he limped off on a Sunday, knowing with some form of discomfort, knowing the Pirates, how they talk. Honestly, I would look at a team like Cincinnati, who has Scooter Gennett.
Wow.
Scooter Gennett would be a perfect fit for Pittsburgh because he is having this home run explosion this year. But if you look at the average length of his home runs, it's only like 370-something feet. It's real low on it. So he's not hitting, you know, these moonshots. He's a product partially for being in Great American Small Park. And there is a good home run porch to hit into at PNC Park. I think he would be a really good fit. I don't know how much demand there is for a second baseman right now, and Cincinnati may as well trade him, because even if he is, you know, a part of their future plans, they could always just buy him in the offseason again.
Yeah, I agree that they need to get better up the middle, and I think what's interesting is the Pirates have an opportunity to be both, essentially. I could see a world where they upgrade at shortstop and second base while also moving one of, you know, Jordy Mercer or Josh Harrison.
We saw it the last 2 years. You know, they acquire Nova and they trade Melanson. They trade Watson and they bring in Benoit.
Liriano.
Which was an addition and a subtraction at the same time.
Yeah. So, and I guess that didn't work out for them, but, you know, Gennett would be a big move.
Yeah, it would. The Pirates would have to win at least 5 of these next 6.
Yeah,
I don't even know 4 to 2.
Yeah, I don't.
They would have to really solidify themselves and say, yo, GM, we are for real right now. We're making our move. We need a power hitter up the middle.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to our second opening topic, which is, I guess, more trade talk. except, you know, the trade talk has been pretty much limited to the veteran guys on this team. The names you hear have been Cervelli, have been Corey Dickerson, have been Yvon Nova, have been David Freese. There's a lot of tradable assets on this team, there are a lot of tradable assets on this team that aren't quote-unquote old guys. Obviously, the best players on the team are not the old guys. They're the young guys. And if you are a team that will be looking to rebuild or sell at the deadline, that would be the Pirates, say they get swept in this opening series against Cincinnati. You know, there is potential big-time return on some of the guys on this roster. Alex, I'll start with you, I guess. If you could trade one young player on this team, by young, I mean under 30. Under 30.
Well, Pirates are pretty easy in knowing who's identified as a young player and an old player.
Who would you pick?
Josh Bell. I would trade Josh Bell. First, just a little aside. Mm-hmm. 2008 Rays. That offseason, before they came into that year where they shocked the world, they won the pennant.
Mm-hmm.
The first move they made was trading Delmon Young, who was a consensus, top prospect. He mm-hmm. might have even been the number one prospect in baseball at the time. Barely had a cup of coffee in the majors. They traded him for Matt Garza, who we're not going to pretend that Matt Garza is, the be-all, end-all of starting pitchers, but he ended up being a solid number two or three.
Yeah.
And they just cashed out on Delmon Young. I have serious reservations with Josh Bell at first base. I think his glove is very bad. He cannot repeat his mechanics. And even though whenever he will hit, that game-winning double, he only has 5 homers this year.
Yeah.
And he has that walk rate, which I know you like to make fun of that, I put so much stock into mm-hmm. this year. But overall, I haven't seen the power. I would rather move Cervelli to first base because I don't know what his future as a catcher is at this point. Give him a year there. Watch Will Craig develop. He'll probably be moving to AAA at some point in the next calendar year, at least. And then deciding at the end of 2019 whether to go forward with Cervelli, give him an extension, because I'm sure he would sign a contract somewhat similar to what he just signed, 3 years, 30-something million. Or if you feel confident enough with Will Craig at first base to make him your, first baseman of the future.
Yeah, I'm not ready to give up on Josh Bell yet. I know.
I think he still has value in him, but if we're talking about Josh Bell a year from now the same way that we are right now, he would not have that value. I would rather cash out right now.
See, and I think that value, I don't know how much it's going to change in a year. I mean, it certainly will go down if he finishes with less than 15 home runs this season, which is more than likely going to be the case.
He would have to have a
big second half. But just like you talk about, what's the Moneyball thing that you refer to Josh Bell with?
Oh, buying genes.
Yeah. Josh Bell has that first baseman gene where, call me dumb, but like I look at him and I see the numbers that he put up last year with the 26 home runs, and I think that he still can do that again. I don't believe that that's an anomaly. And maybe it won't happen with the current people in the front office, with the current manager that he has, the current hitting coach that he has. But I believe Josh Bell has another 25-plus home run season in him. I just do. I think he's just got the power to do it. Maybe he doesn't have the swing, but you talked about he's got other intangibles to his game that could make him valuable to this ball club. And he's a young guy that, when he's at his best, is a player that we kind of always hope to have. And, a reliable first baseman bat when he's at his best, Alex.
Whenever he's at his best, but even at his best, there are 5 tools in baseball.
Yeah.
And, okay, he could get on base at a pretty good clip, and whenever he's at his best, he hits homers, but he can't field, he can't throw, and he can't run.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Which I know are some forgivable traits at first base, but still.
Anyway. My guy I would trade, and you're not going to like to hear this one, but it's Starling Marte.
Ooh.
And here's why. I said on the last podcast that I think Marte and Vasquez are the two guys on this team who are far and away better baseball players than anyone else in the entire system. And I still stand by that. But I look at Marte as a guy that could be someone that another team trades for, and he makes them a World Series favorite. He's a name that he goes to someone and he can complete a lineup. He's not a big name. He's not getting, he's not Manny Machado. You know, he's not front page news when you trade him, but I think he's a guy that a team would recognize as someone who would solidify their lineup. You could play him in any spot in the outfield. He has the arm to play right field. He has the range to play center field and left field. You can hit him anywhere in the lineup. You can hit him at the top because of his speed. You know, not ideally because he swings and misses a lot.
Yes.
But, you know, he has a little bit of pop to his bat. He's a really good all-around player. He's got those years of control that make him very valuable. So he's our best player, and he has years of control, and he's affordable. I think he would bring back a really good return. And I think him and Vasquez would bring back the biggest returns on the team. And when I look at what we have to replace him versus Vasquez, you can plug Austin Meadows in center field. And will he be Starling Marte? I don't know. Because, you know, he's in AAA right now, first off. And second off, we haven't seen enough of Austin Meadows to make that judgment call yet because he's still a rookie. But I am more confident in Austin Meadows filling in a starting role, a big role, than someone potentially being thrown into Vasquez's role as a closer or as the most reliable arm in the bullpen.
Yeah, we got more Meadows talk coming in a bit. But you're talking about, you know, a guy who could be traded, put anywhere in the outfield and in the lineup. My mind immediately went to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like if, but then I started thinking of what other teams are really looking for an outfielder right now, and I can't think of that many. Maybe the Dodgers?
I mean, they're always...
But they're looking for a player right now.
Yeah.
Assuming that the Machado trade does not go through, which, as of Wednesday night, has not happened.
Yeah. I think if it doesn't go through, if Machado ends up going to, like, the Phillies or something, the Dodgers are going to look for the best players they can get. And yeah. Starling Marte, yeah, if he is available at the deadline, will be one of the best available players available, you know, there to take.
The Dodgers are weird because the plan is they're going to put Machado at shortstop, and then they're going to move Taylor to second base and Muncy to first base and Bellinger in the center field. It's like, why don't you just trade for a center fielder then,
yeah,
maybe? I don't know. But I don't know how much demand there is for outfielders right now. I think, yes, in theory, Starling Marte is one of the most valuable commodities in baseball because here's a guy who is going to put up a 4 WAR. He's going to... Mm-hmm. He's going to hit 20-something homers this year. He's going to steal 40 bases. He's going to get on base at a good clip. He's going to provide you above-average defense in center field at a premium position. And he's all under contract for multiple years at a very affordable rate. That's like the makings of like a general manager's dream come true. And if you're going to truly rebuild, yeah, you should trade that contract. That's what the White Sox did with Chris Sale and Adam Eaton. You know, they look like a lot better for the future, even though this year they're not showing it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many teams are looking for an outfielder. And if they are looking for an outfielder, would Cleveland be better suited just getting a Band-Aid with Adam Jones, who Baltimore will just be giving away for almost nothing, probably?
Now, my argument to that would be, because you're trading him to a team, Oakland could also be looking for an outfielder.
They could.
Well, any American League team could take an outfielder because...
And put him at DH.
Yeah, or they could put someone else at DH. I mean, Starling Marte's glove is not going to be put in designated hitter in that spot of the lineup. But, yeah, that's a team where, yeah, he's got the bat and the glove that you could put other people around him. You know, you can move people around. But, yeah, a team like Oakland, a team like Cleveland would probably be willing to give up more prospects because of that affordable contract, because of that control. Where if you trade him to the Dodgers don't care how much a guy costs when they acquire him.
They might this year, though. That's the problem.
Okay, but
because
like,
everyone
general,
has to stay under the salary cap because... Salary cap. Yeah. Payroll luxury tax.
Yeah.
Because not only would you pay more in taxes going forward, you could also lose draft picks going forward. So, which would make Marte even more appealing because he's only making a couple million.
But my argument is like for a team like the Indians and the A's, small market teams with shorter windows, if they were to trade for an Adam Jones, they're A, not going to be thrilled about paying Adam Jones money as a pair.
Baltimore would have to throw in a lot of cash to make
and
it worth it.
B, they're not going to be able to re-sign Adam Jones.
No.
Marte's a guy that they won't have to worry about either of those things. They can pay Marte, and they don't have to worry about re-signing him.
But they're going to have to give up a whole lot more. And if I'm, say, Oakland, where I'm three games out of the wild card and basically the only other game in town besides Seattle. It's them versus Seattle for that fifth wild card or for that fifth playoff spot. How much am I willing to invest both in terms of dollars and prospects to play as the visiting team against either the Yankees or the Red Sox on the road?
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. Yeah. So we'll keep the outfield talk going. We'll talk about a guy in the Pirates outfield now who has been at the center of a lot of discussion. Don't you just love Pittsburgh sports fans, Alex, how even when the Pirates win six in a row, they can still find things to complain about?
Can't we just enjoy good baseball?
And some good baseball has been played by this guy, Jordan Luplo, a two-home run game in the second game of their doubleheader sweep over the Milwaukee Brewers on Saturday. But Jordan Luplo is an interesting case here. This is a guy that he wasn't really on anyone's radar. The casual fan.
Okay.
Coming into the last couple of seasons.
As you see my eyebrows slowly start to raise.
You heard about Polanco and Marte and Meadows and McCutcheon and all these outfield prospects as they worked their way through the system. But Luplo was a name that you really didn't hear come up that often until he was called up last season when Polanco pulled the hamstring in Colorado. And I feel like he got a negative rep then because that's when everyone was, again, expecting this team to become buyers because they were one game over 500 and instead they put all their faith in Luplo to replace him. And he wasn't ready, clearly. And he didn't do well, so that kind of gave him a little bit of a negative rep. But Jordan Luplo is a third-round pick who made it to the major leagues before his 24th birthday, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he's got a pretty bright future ahead of him, I would say. This is somebody that, if he played a different position, I feel like the Pirates would be much, much, much higher on. But because of the young talent that already is in the outfield for the Pirates, it makes everyone ask, you know, where does Jordan Luplo fit in this team's future? And that's the question I'll ask you, Alex.
I don't honestly know where he fits in this team's future because obviously the next man up is Austin Meadows. I mean, if the Pirates trade Dickerson or Marte either this year or in the future, if one of them gets hurt, it's going to be Meadows' job again. Obviously, right now, I think the plan is Luplo is a fourth outfielder, and I honestly don't know how much more he is in that. But I will say, down in A-ball, at the varying levels of A-ball, all I heard was this guy, you know, is tearing up bad in practice. He's got so much raw power. If he could somehow translate this to a game, he could be a major league starter one day. And he hit 20-something homers with a bunch of doubles last year.
23, I believe.
Yeah, in the varying levels of the minor leagues. Like, he went from double A and hit so well there that the Pirates were pretty much forced to put him in triple A, and he tore it up there so much that they're like, okay, well, Polanco's done. We'll give him the shot. So the raw power's there. We saw it on display in Game 2 of that doubleheader with the two homers. That's what he can do. I kind of view him, honestly, Locked On Pirates fans would know Jared Prugar. He was the host of Clear the Deck with me, now defunct show. You're my new Jared.
Oh, that's good.
But Jared was really high on Jordan. He said, like, you know how you feel about Morov, how if this guy got the chance, the raw power is there. He gets on base. He had a very good clip. You know, if he got his chance in the major leagues, he would probably really surprise some people. So I see a lot of the same things also in Morov that I see in Luplo. So I guess join those two players, which maybe isn't that appealing to a lot of people out there. But if you're looking for a guy who gets on base and has raw power and just needs a chance, I think they're two very similar players.
I'll give a little bit better of a name that maybe their style of play isn't very similar, but I think their situation is. I compare him to Kieran Broxton.
Keon has the glove.
Well, not their style of play, but their situation where
the situation,
Keon came up at the end of 15, and you just looked at that outfield, and you, where are we going to put you, buddy? I mean, because
Meadows gave him away in prospect for Jason Rogers.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. You had a really good prospect that they I don't even know. Was he even on the playoff roster? I think they used him toward the end of the season a lot as like a pinch runner.
Yeah.
I remember. And then you kind of saw promise in him. But again, it was, where do we put you? You had Meadows waiting, and with the three outfielders they had then, there just wasn't an answer. So they got rid of him.
I don't know why it's so bad for a young kid to break into the major leagues and stick around as a fourth outfielder for so long, especially with a guy like Keon Broxton, like Jordan Luplo. And I'm even going to throw Josh Harrison into this mix as a success story, because Josh came up as a bench player for the most part, mostly because his perceived ceiling wasn't so high.
Yeah.
So Keon, you know, his ceiling wasn't too high. Luplo's ceiling's not too high. Why is it so bad that they could be a fourth outfielder, learn in the major leagues, and be around a major league roster and, you know, coaching staff?
And is that what you want for Luplo?
Right now, I think that's what the best plan is for Luplo, until he, once again, just, it's not fair to him, you know, that, you know, Gregory Polanco was pretty much ordained, you know, in AAA as a future starting right fielder, and, you know, Luplo's just absolutely murdered every level of pitching that he's faced, and now he gets up to the major leagues. It's like, okay, you're going to start, you know, once, twice a week, and if you do really well there, maybe you can, you know, strangle away some at-bats from one of our, you know, incumbent outfielders. But I think that's the situation that he's in right now.
That'll wrap up our opening topics discussion. We're now going to move on to second half talk here on the River Blast podcast. All right, Alex, one half of the season for the Pirates, a little bit more than a half, if we're being 100% correct, which I'm sure baseball nerds like you would prefer me to say.
Absolutely, yeah.
Anyway, the All-Star break is over. We're into the real stretch that matters here, and second half time. So this will be our second half talk for the Pittsburgh Pirates. We're going to give some predictions, just some general thoughts that we have, our expectations, I guess you could say, for the Bucks in these last 70 and some odd games remaining in their schedule. Can they take this momentum that they gained in this last week and move it forward and try to compete? Or will they falter out as they have done in the past second halves of the last couple of seasons? We'll start off, Alex, best starting pitcher for the Pirates in the second half. Who do you got?
I've got Jameson Taillon, because Taillon is a different pitcher than we saw at the beginning of the first half. He's got that slider now, which he uses a lot more, and his fastball usage, as a result, has gone really far down. Through his first 10 starts of the year, he threw his fastball at least 60-something percent of the time. It was in the 60s. I don't have the exact number in front of me. But since adding the slider and using it, you know, really effectively since May 27th, his last 10 starts, 3.29 ERA with like a 3.09 FIP, good strikeout numbers. He looks really good. He looks like the type of guy that, you know, is billed as the number two overall draft pick and could be, you know, an ace of the rotation. And even though with a bad defense behind him, 3.29 ERA, I think everyone would take that down the second half of the season. I think he's going to really break out.
I'm going to play off the last sentence. A guy who I think is really going to break out in the second half is Nick Kingham. I've always been high on Nick Kingham. I think it's mainly because of his warm-up song being Let Me Clear My Throat by DJ Kool.
Great song.
Oh, just fantastic. And that does match Nick's personality. Nick is one of the most enjoyable interviews in that clubhouse. He's just got such a natural... He's just a nice guy. And he's pretty fun to watch pitch, I think, when he's going. He's one of those guys that the Pirates, I think, needed. He's a strikeout pitcher, I think, when he's fully moving, and I think he can be a very reliable guy in their rotation, not only this year, but many years to come. He had that stuff that everyone loved when he was in the minor league system. He was one of their top-rated prospects for a while, but then the injuries kind of made people forget about him. But I've seen enough to be sold on this guy, especially in his last start, and I think with Kool's injury still having some uncertainty around it, and with other guys like Williams still struggling to find consistency, I think Nick Kingham's going to take that step and not only assert himself as one of the best pitchers on this team for the remainder of this season, but he's going to come into next year as maybe the team's third starter. I think he's going to do that well.
I'm doing something on Kingham for the Point of Pittsburgh, which is out now, since, you know, this is future Thursday talking, not Wednesday night.
Oh, my goodness. Which, we're time travelers.
Yes, we are. I've already written this story at this point.
Hello, lucky Noah.
Kingham has allowed 27 runs this year, and 11 have come in the first inning.
Mm-hmm.
If you take away his first inning, he has the lowest ERA on this staff from, like, second inning on. So maybe I love the idea of the opener. I think he might be the type of guy who could really use it. But overall, if he's just struggling to get out of the gate, I feel like that could be the type of thing that you can learn with just repetition. I wouldn't be surprised. We've seen all four pitches play in the major leagues, which is what you really need. Even the changeup. It's the only good changeup on the, you know, starting rotation staff right now. I think there is a lot of potential for Nick Kingham. I agree that, you know, he was kind of thrown under the rug because of all the injuries that he had and people kind of forgot about him. I wouldn't be surprised if he is a, you know, a factor into this rotation for next year.
Yeah, to wrap up our Nick Kingham talk, I guess, you just look at him and you look at his ability to get batters out, and you talked about the first inning problems. This whole staff has kind of been awful in the first inning. I don't know. I know at one point of the season, their first inning ERA was like over 8. I don't know what it is now. I mean, I'm sure it's changed since these last string of wins, but
in this wonderful stretch, in this wonderful situation, which I already wrote this story already, May 19th was the day that Tampa Bay started the opener.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, they've allowed the fewest runs in the first inning in the American League, and coincidentally, Pirates have allowed the most runs in the first inning in baseball.
Yeah, well, I look at first inning runs, and you're probably going to disagree with me, and you'll have tons of weird stats to back it up. I look at first inning runs allowed as not like a mechanical problem or anything. I look at that as just not being properly prepared.
Properly prepared, and you're going to be facing the team's number 1-3 hitters, guaranteed. You've got to face the cream of their crop
right
off the bat.
Yeah, and that's something that obviously you can't control, but the preparation thing, I think that falls on coaches, and I think that falls on just how they've been kind of developed. And we talk about development, but this is something where, you know, the way they pitch and letting them use their pitches, that's like a deep development problem. I think this is an easy fix. I think there is something that with a little bit of time off, and because these guys are so young, I think this is a problem that can be easily solved, where they think, okay, well, we just tweak one or two things here and we get that scoreless first inning a couple times. I think that's, like I said, that's an easier problem to solve. And you take away that, you give these guys a scoreless first inning, you take away those crooked numbers that get posted on them every other start, then the staff looks pretty good. And everyone in baseball likes to talk about, oh, third time through the order, that's where they all get hit. These guys, that's not really a problem for some of them. It's mainly their first time through the order. And if you can survive that without having to call, you know, Stephen Brault or Tyler Glasnow to the mound in the fourth inning, these guys are going to give you a pretty good start. And I am more optimistic for guys that have first inning problems than who have fourth inning problems.
Fourth inning would probably be the worst time to have a problem, because if you have sixth inning problems, it's like, okay, just get them out of there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, same question, just flipped a little bit. Who is your batter to watch? Best batter in the second half?
I'm going to go with batter to watch. I don't know if he's going to be the best batter in the second half, but someone that I am really, really, really excited to watch hit in the second half is Elias Diaz, because I am not sure as to what the future has in store for Francisco Cervelli, both as a catcher and just as an overall baseball player. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, these head injuries, and I did some research. I found an article from the New York Times in 2012. That talked about how he had already had three concussions as a catcher in the big leagues then. That was in 2012. Reminder, this guy suffered four with the Pirates in the last 2 years.
These last 2 years he's had to go on the DL, played a little bit, then had to go on the DL again because of recurrent symptoms from it.
So that's seven concussions right there, and we're not even including...
Can you count those other ones as concussions.
Two, okay.
Let's just count and, you know, not being properly healed.
Best case scenario, five
concussions. That's
five. And that's five still not including the time between 2012 and 2015.
Yeah.
He might have suffered one then. And he probably suffered one prior to his big league career. You know, how many of these have gone undiagnosed? There's a lot of head problems with Cervelli, just with these injuries. And like I said, this is going to lead to more opportunities for Elias Diaz. I think this second half could easily be his coming out party, and it's definitely a prove-it opportunity for him. He had that little stint, more than a little stint, where he played 14 games in a row. And we saw some good, we saw some bad from him. But if he can take this opportunity, because I, like I said, I'm not a believer in Cervelli's health. I'm a believer in him as a ball player and maybe as a first baseman. But he still has a lot to learn to play that position. And I don't know if we're going to see him play too many games behind the plate anymore. So with that being my opinion, I think that Diaz is going to have a really good shot to prove himself, prove to many people that he himself can be the Pirates catcher of the future. So I'm excited to see him do that at the plate.
Yeah, Diaz kind of was thrown into that situation that, you know, hypothetical situation that we gave to Luplo.
Yeah.
And Jehe, you know, like, okay, it's not fair that, you know, he had to do all this all in the major leagues, but you got to have to out-hit Cervelli or at the very least Josh Bell to get playing time.
Yeah, and we talked about in the first show kind of where does this team get power from, and
he's got some pop.
He's got some pop. I would not be mad to see this guy bat fourth or fifth in the lineup for the rest of the year.
It's telling whenever your backup catcher bats fourth and people are okay with it.
Yeah, it is telling, but at the same time, I see more potential in him as a fourth or fifth hitter than anyone else in the lineup.
Could you imagine back in the day, like Keith Osick batting cleanup or
J.R. House?
J.R.
Humberto Cota.
I was just going to say Cota.
Yeah.
My batter of the watch is Gregory Polanco, because he got off to that great start and then really cooled off, and then the coaching staff moved him off the plate. He was hovering a little too close to the edge, close to the plate. They backed him off a little bit, and since June 6th, which was his first day back, he has a 170 WRC+. He has an OPS over 1,000. He's slashing 295, 389, 632. It's outstanding. There's really no other word for it. And I think it is the mechanical change that is making that possible. Do I expect him to, you know, have a 1,000 OPS plus in the second half? No. But, you know, that's over a month worth of a sample size, well over 100-something plate appearances. It's not really just, you know, a freak thing where, you know, a couple home runs, you know, throws the whole thing off. A couple home runs doesn't, you know, account to a 389 on base percentage. I think he's really showing what he can do, at least offensively. The glove is still...
It is what it is. You could say that for many people on this team in the field.
Yeah. But as a hitter, right now, I think he could carry this lineup, theoretically, in the second half.
And I would like to see that. You know, I don't want to counter your point, I don't want to see these roller coaster type months for Polanco to continue, because no one...
I would rather have him be a consistent, like, 360 OBP guy with, like, a 500 slugging percentage than to have one month where he's, you know, the second best hitter
in the league,
second or third besides, you know, like Trout and, you know, Betts,
mm-hmm.
and then another one where he's basically unusable.
Yeah, and that's my thing I was going to say is, yeah, no one wants another Pedro Alvarez.
No.
No one wants that. And
no one wants the current Pedro Alvarez.
Yeah, and no one wants that either. Yeah, but no, like, while Pedro, you look back and he's the last Pirate to hit over 30 home runs, he led the league in home runs, it's hard to believe that only 5 years ago we had the NL home run king, or a tie for it.
Yeah,
and you know, drove in 100 runs in multiple seasons, and he was a really solid power bat in the Pirates lineup for a couple of years. That inconsistency is really what had him labeled as a bust, and I want to see some sort of consistency. And like what you said, I'm going to dumb it down. I'm going to water it down a little bit. I'd rather him just consistently hit 265 than have him hit 300 one month and 200 the next month. And like you said, with the OPS, I just want to see all of it. I want to see consistent numbers. And they don't have to be amazingly consistent numbers, but I would rather have less highs if it also meant less lows, if that makes sense with Polanco.
That makes perfect sense.
All right. So our final topic here for second half talk will be your biggest concern for the second half. And I will take this one. Actually, no. I'll let you take it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I don't want to step on your toes.
No.
All right.
Because I won first last time.
Okay.
So biggest concern for the second half.
Mine's a team. It's the Cincinnati Reds.
Ooh.
Pirates play them 9 times in the second half, 6 times in Cincinnati.
Yikes.
This first series that they were in Cincinnati for.
Biggest series of the season.
Yeah, coming up, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the first time they were in Cincinnati was when everything started to go awry.
The Matt Harvey start.
And Yvonne,
where were you when the Matt Harvey start happened?
And that was also coincidentally like the last time that, you know, Tyon had a fastball percentage in the 60% for a start. That might have been the turning point. Jim Riggleman is leading these Cincinnati Reds to a good record right now. They're over 500 since he took over. And a winning record Cincinnati Reds team and a Pirates team that couldn't beat bad Cincinnati Reds teams. I just think that's a recipe for disaster. So, yes, they start off first 3 games out of the break are in Cincinnati. If they win those series, you know, they keep mattering. The last 3 games they play this year are in Cincinnati. So either I don't think anyone out there is going to say that the Pirates, the last series of the year, are going to have a playoff spot locked up.
Yeah.
You could say that they're still alive, you know, the last series of the year. And if they're still alive, there is absolutely nothing that a well-oiled Cincinnati machine would rather do than end Pittsburgh's season. Mm-hmm. I am concerned about that one team in particular more than any other in the league.
That is some really good thinking ahead on your end. My biggest concern are players on the roster with the first name Josh. For Josh Harrison, we'll start with him. That's my guy. I always talk to him when I'm in the clubhouse. Super cool guy. He's been one of my favorite players since I was, you know, in high school.
Oh, yeah.
But he's really underperformed this year. And he's had a couple injuries. Who knows with the hamstring, what's going on with that. And
the hand, his batted ball profile has been real bad since coming back from that hand injury,
yeah.
Which is the second time he broke it in less than a year.
Yeah.
Maybe it didn't heal all the
way. And with this injury now that we haven't really heard about, will it hurt his trade stock? And is his trade stock even worth moving him at this point because of the year that he's had? And if you can't move him, will Josh Harrison being in the lineup every day hurt the future of your team? Because, you know, if the idea is if you don't move Harrison, that the team is trying to make the playoffs, right? But say this team wants to start to rebuild or at least prepare for next season, and they can't find anyone to deal Harrison to, now he's taking away reps from Kevin Newman, from Kevin Kramer, from Max Moroff.
For new parts, Scooter Jeanette.
Yeah. In the perfect world, right? But so that's my concern there will moving him be harder than it should have been prior to his injuries? And, you know, will this bad year continue if he does stay here? Will he pick it up? And speaking of bad years, yeah, the Josh Bell sophomore slump, I mean, calling it just a sophomore slump would be an understatement.
Yeah, he's been below replacement level.
Yeah, and, I mean, David Freese, I think, has as many home runs. Estrod has, like, 2 less, which is all
wow.
You need to say. Yeah.
You know, that's one of those things that's staring you in the face, but you don't put 2 and 2 together
until someone
says it out
loud. That's how bad his power has been. So, Josh Bell, I need to see 10 home runs in the second half, which, saying that a year ago didn't seem so crazy. Like, oh, 10 home runs, he can do that in the second half of a season. Was that 2 a month? Maybe? Something like that?
10? That's 4 a month.
Oh, 4
for
a
two,
month?
For 2.5
oh,
months.
Yeah. Not a math guy.
Really?
Anyway, but at the end of the day, I need to see that. I need to see something. I need to see something change. The walks are cool, but he's not giving me enough to be a believer still. So I need to see something from the Joshes. And that'll wrap up our second half talk. Alex, we'll bring this to an end How many wins did the Pirates finish with?
Right now?
Yeah.
I said at the beginning of the year 81 and 81. I'm going to stick with 81 and 81.
Wow, middleman. Yeah. I said I'm going to also stick with my beginning of the year prediction. I said 77 wins. I think the Cincinnati series ahead of us, I just think, has sweep written all over it. And I don't know who is going to get swept.
Someone's going to get swept.
Someone's going to die.
Don't even bother up for the other two games of the series.
Yes. So, but if worse comes to worse and they do get swept, I think that's going to be a very, you know, telling way of how the second half's going to go. And, you know, 77 wins, that's around what they were projected to get. That's what I predicted them to do, and I think that, you know, that's what they finish at. I hope I'm wrong. I hope, you know, they're closer to your number. I hope they're above your number. And that'll wrap up our second half talk. Now we're going to move on to some segments. All right, Alex, you know what time it is?
It's time to go home.
It's segment time. Yeah. Segment time here to wrap up the show. First segment, the one we're always going to do, buy, sell, trade. I'll start. Who I'm buying? Ke'Bryan Hayes went yard in the futures game. And it is just nice to see that we still have some talent left in the minor leagues. This is a guy, he was another first-round pick. You know, not many first-round picks have gone well for the Pirates in pretty much all of the Neil Huntington era. And this guy looks to be pretty promising. I don't know where he kind of fits in. If Moran ends up being a decent ball player, maybe you could move him to second base or shortstop. But I'm excited about Ke'Bryan Hayes. Just to see that display at the Futures game, granted the last Pirate to homer in a Futures game was Josh Bell, and we're seeing how his power numbers are looking this season, but I'm excited about that. Who am I selling? I'm selling Francisco Cervelli. I'm selling him to anyone that will take him. And while I really enjoy Cervelli, I think he is a great hitter. I'm not ready, as I said, to give up on Josh Bell at first base yet. And I don't believe in Cervelli as a first baseman yet, and I don't believe his health will allow him to be a catcher next season. Maybe this year they'll keep it going, but next year I don't see him being a catcher, and we have our catcher. So I'll give him away to anyone who wants him, which I think will still be a tough sell. And last but not least, we have trade, and I am going to trade David Freese. I think that David Freese has been really good as of late for the Pirates. He's had a really good season off the bench, and everyone's looking for a bench guy. Everyone's looking for that bench corner infielder, postseason experience, postseason hero. I'm selling David Freese. What are your thoughts, Alex, on my three picks?
I think you're a little too hard on Cervelli. Give him to anyone who wants him. I think he has trade value, even with the concussions, still.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, you can mark him as a DH or first baseman, if nothing else. He's hitting the ball well.
Okay.
I think a lot of teams would be fine with having, you know, that as a backup catcher, in everyday DH, or at the very least, like a Joe Mauer-esque player. David Freese, I don't know how much you could get for him, but if teams are willing to overpay, and, you know, the Pirates do embrace being sellers if they get swept by the Reds or whatever, and it's all for naught.
When you say, I don't know how much we could get for him, we got O'Neill Cruz for Tony Watson last year.
But that was selling.
That was a reliever.
I know.
That's my trade. Okay. Give me yours.
All right.
Oh, what are your thoughts on Hayes?
Hayes, I'm intrigued.
Okay. You buying it? You taking a flyer?
I'm taking a flyer.
All right.
Okay. I am buying Pirates players tweets from 7 years ago.
Yikes.
Yeah. Not a good look for Josh Hader at the All-Star game. It was such a fun All-Star game, and it just turned so ugly so fast. I mean, kids are looking up to this guy. You can't say, you know, white power. And I know he says he was 17. He's like, okay, but what about in 2015 whenever you tweeted this, in 2016 whenever you tweeted this?
Here's my thing.
And
on
whenever
the,
your yeah. girlfriend, fiance, wife, I don't know what the person he's in a relationship with is, you know, tweeting out the same stuff also more recently. So I'm just saying that if I was going to be in a profession where I have to deal with Eric Thames as a teammate, Maybe be more careful about what you tweet.
I don't know what my tweets from 2011 look like. My guess, probably a lot of grammatical errors.
Yeah.
And did I say stupid things? I'm sure I did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm 99.9% sure I've never... I'm 100% sure I've never said anything like what Josh Hader said.
Good, but 0.1% to add.
You know, there are... I will say that there are certain, you know, things when you're 17 years old, you don't think like that kind of stuff. And that doesn't excuse the way he was thinking when he said those things. And I'm not advocating for those comments being made in any circumstance. They're still wrong. But that's just tough to see. I mean, and it, you know, my bigger blame for Josh Hader on that whole thing is, after seeing this happen to Josh Allen, after seeing this happen to the kid from Villanova, the basketball player, after he had his big game, after seeing this happen to so many people when they get their big moment of fame in sports, if you're an athlete, I'm paying whoever I have to pay whatever amount of money to make sure my 17-year-old self does never existed on the internet.
Exactly.
I don't care. And, and that, you can call that a cover-up. You can call that whatever you want. But Josh Hader's whole argument on his whole statement is, that's not who I am anymore. And if that's the case, why let someone see the past you? And, you know,
because you can have control over it.
That's
people aren't going to go through tweet tunnels and, you know, check out, you know, what was actually on your Twitter in 2011.
Yeah. And, well, you have an argument saying, like, kids are watching Josh Hader pitch in the All-Star game and they're looking up to him. But people weren't looking up to the 17-year-old Josh Hader.
No, they
weren't. And it's his job to make sure that even if, you know, if he thinks he's a good role model now, he can, you know, make himself avoid a whole bunch of problems. You got to get rid of that kind of stuff. And if I ever get famous, you know, I'm going to have someone do that for me, because, like I said, I'm very, very, very confident. I did not say anything similar to that.
No.
But I'm sure there's a bunch of tweets that I would look at now and be like, I would rather them not be on the internet.
Yeah.
Just stupid things. And, you know, I guess that's where the blame falls for me. Aside from the obvious, that's stuff you should never say.
And the reason why I bring up the kids is because, A, I remember being, you know, a kid and looking up to ball players, and, you know, it was disheartening to grow up and realize that, like, Jason Kendall was, you know, a D-bag.
Yeah.
But he wasn't, you know, saying this stuff. He was just, you know, regular.
A jerk.
Yeah, he was just a jerk, you know, regular. But whenever you're 17 years old, 17-year-olds, for lack of a better phrase, really don't know the way the world works.
No.
Especially whenever you're a white kid growing up in a suburb of a major city, you really don't know how it works. So whenever a ball player, you know, says the N-word, even, you know, back, you know, whenever he was 17 or anything, it kind of diminishes how degrading and how that was used, you know, to keep other people down for no good reason.
Yeah.
Which is why whenever I see this, it's sad. And it wasn't just Hader. It was Kyle Schwarber. There were a couple tweets that, you know, also came out of him being, you know, saying some inappropriate things. Not to Hader's level, but
if you casualize this,
then you really are you're an enabler at this point.
And it's just tough. All of it is just a bad scenario.
Yeah, it is a bad scenario. And you know what? Jameson Taillon's tweets are the same as Jameson Taillon, the person, which is the same guy you see on the mound. Trevor Williams, same thing. I'm giving two thumbs up to Pirate Twitter. Three thumbs up to Trevor Williams' Twitter. You know, he's joking about...
You know who
they put a video of Josh Bell's walk off through the rain. Yeah, and he's like, thank you, Al Gore, for the internet.
You want to know who I want everyone to follow on Twitter?
Who?
Richard Rodriguez. That guy's got a blue check mark and less than 300 followers.
I don't know if I follow
Rich Rod. Followed him.
I'm going to fix that. This is good radio.
Yeah.
Good podcasting.
Please,
whenever I check my Twitter.
Everyone,
you know,
listening to this, please give Richard Rodriguez a follow, because my man's got a blue check mark And
I don't even have a blue check mark. And how'd he do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a Major League Baseball player. He deserves it, but he's got a blue check mark, and he's got less than 300 followers. That's wild. Alex, while you look up Richard Rodriguez on Twitter, who are you selling?
I'm selling Josh Harrison's bike. He admitted, you know, he's like, oh, it's like riding a bike, but I wouldn't know because I can't ride a bike. Ugh. Much to Juju's dismay. And you know what, Josh? I'm going to let the internet in on a big secret. I can't ride a bike either.
You can't ride a bike?
I can't ride a bike either. So Josh and me will do something fun while the rest of you guys are riding bikes.
Man. That's a good content idea coming up here. Alex and Josh learn how to ride a bike. All right, and who are you trading?
I'm trading Richard Rodriguez, regardless of where the Pirates are in the standings.
And regardless of his Twitter following?
And regardless of his Twitter following. I'll find you, Richard. Don't worry. I'm actually having a hard time following.
Oh, it's tough to find.
Just DM me it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Teams overpay for relievers at the deadline. We've started this many moons ago talking about how the Nationals, you know, we traded away two future All-Stars for one future All-Star and a couple of guys who pick up saves, which is a worthless stat in between. If someone's going to overpay for Richard Rodriguez, regardless of where the Pirates are in the standings, I don't think this is, you know, a be-all, end-all, got-to-win-now team. Cash out.
He's got 66 followers, actually.
He's got 66?
Oh, and he doesn't have a blue check mark. So that's on me. But, I mean, he's followed by Greg Brown, Alan Saunders, and the Indianapolis Indians.
He's got 67 followers right now. We're going to see if we have a river blast, like boost, like the Colbert bump. We're going to see if we can we get Richard Rodriguez up to 100 followers?
I want 500 by the end of the year. We're going to make that.
Oh, no, I want 100 by the end of the day this is released. 33 people are going to be listening to this point for some reason.
Okay.
And they're going to go on Twitter and they're going to follow Richard Rodriguez.
We will Venmo the 100th.
No, we're not.
Winner.
We will not.
100 pennies. I will Venmo you $1.
No.
I will pay out of my own pocket.
You know what? I'll go 50-50 on this.
Okay. So our podcast will give the 100th follower, if it gets to 100 by the end of tomorrow or today when you're listening, we will give the winner or the 100th follower $1. This is our first contest. And I want 500. This is going to be a campaign we stick with.
You know, if we get to 500, I'll give up the $5.
Okay.
How about you give the one buck? If we get up to 500, I'll give five.
I want 500 followers for Rich Rod on Twitter by the end of the season. His Twitter handle, not a great one, at Richard042101. It's at Richard042101. Follow him, and if we get him to, you know what's gonna happen. All right. So who are you looking to sell him to? Any specific team or just
whoever? Washington. They seem to be stupid whenever they buy relievers.
All right. Yeah. Maybe they'll give us.
How many All Stars they got left?
Yeah. All right. So Alex will debut a new segment here to wrap up the show, and it is called Sink or Float. This is where I give you a hot take or you bring a hot take to the table and we discuss. So sink or float, I'm going to go first. Do you have one or no?
I don't have one.
All right, so I'll make the debut hot take. Kevin Newman will have more starts at shortstop in the second half of the season than Jordy Mercer or Jung Ho Gung. Sink or float.
Jordy and Jung Ho put together or individually?
Individually.
That floats.
That floats. You're buying into that.
I'm buying into it. I think the Pirates, again, unless they absolutely go on a tear, you know, they replicate what they did this last week and the week leading up to the trade deadline, I think their mindset is going to be we're going to try to trade the guys who have expiring contracts, you know, to get something out of it. I think Jordy falls into that category. I think that floats.
Yeah. I through making this podcast today, I've come to the conclusion that this team is going to be a buyer and a seller. Best case scenario.
That's kind of what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, and I see Jordy as one of their more valuable assets that they can trade.
There's so many shortstops. You can have Iglesias, you can have Galvis.
Yeah, but I mean, someone's going to miss out. Jordy's going to be the guy that gets traded at 3:59. Jordy's going to be the 3:59 p.m. trade. He's going to be the
move. Every move Huntington makes is at 3:59.
Exactly.
And we don't find out until like 4:37.
Yeah.
He's always the last guy.
Yeah. You know, Jordy's going to. And
don't leave MLB Network until 5 o'clock whenever you
watch
it. And with
Jung Ho being unpredictable, Kevin Newman. Yeah.
I don't know if Jung Ho even makes a start at shortstop.
Exactly. So give me Kevin Newman as the team shortstop in the second half. All right, Alex, any final remarks, closing thoughts? We didn't get to do the Around the League segment, I know.
We did not.
But I'm sorry about it.
We've had so much. I kind of threw it off the rails by talking about, you know, Josh Hader.
Yeah,
so
we really got into that. But it's okay. It's okay.
Final thought is don't say stupid stuff on Twitter, especially if you're 17.
And if you do, make sure you're Richard Rodriguez because only 66 people follow you.
67. I'm 67.
I'm just kidding. No. Follow Alex on Twitter. What is it? At Alex J. Stumpf.
Yep. STUMPF.
And follow me on Twitter, Noah_Hiles95. And if you don't want to follow us, do us a big favor. Follow our man's Richard Rodriguez. I'm not going to say his Twitter handle again because it's just really difficult to do, and I already exited out of it. So on behalf of my co-host, Alex Stumpf, I am Noah Hiles saying thank you once again for listening to the second episode, the Jack Wilson episode of the River Blast Podcast. We'll see you next time, folks.